mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 446. I'm Haddam, I haven't got a quote, but here's Mary Lang.
Are there lords in such a small domain?
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan. Did you tread on something, Kirby?
or one
stub
of
your
cats.
Toe or something like that?
That was the Black Guardian at the very end.
Oh, God's sake, yeah, I forgot about that. I got that awful thought out of my mind until you said that. This week we're going to be discussing Enlightenment. I think we've done it before.
Yes, we have. That was a quote I used last time.
How original of you. I'm talking about Enlightenment, and I haven't got a quote because we were so busy trying to get Mary on, I forgot to look, to be fair. Hope everybody's still keeping well. I have felt a lot better since putting a hard line of Dettol into my bloodstream. What I wasn't quite sure is whether it should be Dettol or a derivative, because Dettol itself is very hard to get hold of these days. I've got some chocolate. If you've got chocolate, wine, Dettol, and some bottom wipers, you'll find life in this sort of confinement quite easy. But most people are going out gallivanting to beaches and using the excuses that you can go out for your half hour run to actually go out for the day and go camping.
Oh, but where Kirby lives, they're free to do what they want to do now.
No, not everything. No, just certain things. The most dangerous things.
Just podcasting, Mary. They're allowed to do podcasting.
And also, a lot of places are saying, no way, I'm not opening.
God, I give up. Well, people to be allowed to do hairdressing
at home.
No
way, I'm not going out.
Yeah, logic dictates that if everybody stays home and doesn't go out and all the gallivanting, you're going to keep that 2 meters minimum distance. You're going to restrict the virus's transference, therefore lower the rate of deaths and spreading of it. However, everybody's in their mind that I think some people don't believe it's happening, to be fair, but because they don't actually see the physical, repercussions. They just hear these numbers. All these deaths are just numbers to them, unless you've had a friend or a family member has died, or unless you're working in that environment and you've witnessed these terrible, deaths and illnesses. Yeah. So it is difficult for people to sort of really believe it's happening. It's a very, different thing, and nobody's experienced anything like this in our lifetimes. Yeah. It's something we'll always remember and hope it will never happen again. But
we've already had one person in one of the factories of the company I work for has died of it.
Oh, God, that's not good. On the Facebook feed, we've got Lillian Robin said, "About time." No, you're not going to goad me today, Lillian. Terry Miles says hi.
That's my fault, Lillian. My Skype would not work for me.
And Paul Clement says hi, Adam. So hello. Right. Enough about COVID. Let's go on to Doctor Who. Far more important. Talking about Doctor Who.
And yes.
We're going to get. I don't want to loiter too long on these episodes. I know Kirby likes the review to last longer than the actual story. Laura Nick says, beachgoers, don't tell me about it. Grr, grr, grr. But nice to know that you're all doing okay. Take care. Yeah, we want it to be over, but we want it to, we just want. It's very annoying. What I find it most difficult, before I move on to Doctor Who, is not getting annoyed or controlling the anger I have in these people that just go out and do these things that we all want to do anyway. They just go out and do it. That's the thing I find difficult. I shouldn't really, because you're making yourself unhappy by other people's actions, and I find that really difficult. It might be my age.
I was going to say, if people just make wise choices, it will work for all of us. It's the people that are feeling, rebellious and anti-rules and all that that are out there making it.
The frustrating thing is nothing's being done about it, and people just do it. You mustn't do that, but they do it anyway. Enlightenment. Sorry, I got a bit trapped in there. Begins with the title sequence, and some shenanigans in the TARDIS. A first game of chess to be seen in the TARDIS
Master?
Console room. What? Since the Fourth Doctor.
Yes. The stage directions that Barbara Clegg put in this were for Turlough to be playing the black pieces because he's being controlled by the Black Guardian.
But
they put the chessboard up the wrong way around. Also, they put the TARDIS walls up the wrong way around.
They did?
Yeah, the roundels are poking the wrong way. They're poking out instead of poking in.
Okay, never noticed that. But then, of course, they're glowing orange anyway, aren't they? Because they've done the low light.
That may have been the reason they did it, so that the glow would look good. Because it's nice to have the lights down for a change.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's Tegan is playing Turlough. Or Tegan takes over from the Doctor in the chess game. And then suddenly the lights go very low. Yes?
This is also the very last scene where we recorded of the old console, of this particular console. Even though King's Demons is next time, they've already recorded King's Demons. So they're about to take this console and get it out of there and bring in the nice new Five Doctors one. Although they kept this console to use it in the Two Doctors.
Thank you, Kirby.
I'm sure you love that.
No. Anyway, so then the White Guardian turns up. It's got probably got one of these old fangled mobile phones because he can't tune in properly. The Doctor can't quite get the signal. And then and then Mr. Scenery Chewing Black Guardian turns up. There's a lot of those sort of. That's what should have been my quote.
I don't know if he's just getting tired of doing these scenes or I'm just tired of hearing him, but his laughter and all that just seems to be losing a lot of the force. You know, now it's just kind of like a, you know, turn on the switch.
What I should have got, it was a laugh that he went. That sort of laugh. That was ridiculous.
There's a nice extra on the DVD. It's an interview with Valentine Dial's daughter.
Yes.
And she says, oh, he's a really, really nice guy, etc. But he would read her bedtime stories and his voice would scare her.
Good. He's an actor. Anyway, but yeah, so so the White Guardians were trying to warn the Doctor, but of course his words can't get through properly. But the Black Guardians, you know, threats and stuff do get through. So,
Matthew.
To Turlough.
Oh, okay. To Turlough, yes.
Thank you.
The Doctor was frozen during that walk around by the Black Guardian.
Yes. Anyway, so Turlough is obviously still, he's sort of not convinced at this stage that, that he should be killing the Doctor, but he's very, very scared of the Black Guardian, despite the fact the Black Guardian's let him off on every single attempt that he's had to kill
the Doctor.
This
is your last chance!
Anyway, so they've sort of materialised in some sort of cargo hold and told Tegan to stay inside the console room, which, very unusually for her, she does initially. And then we get the weirdest peeping Tom in the history of Doctor Who appears, climbs up the TARDIS and peers in through the scanner. And then the White Guardian appears to Tegan and tries to convey another warning. Turlough and the Doctor, meanwhile, start walking around the ship and sort of go into the mess, or where all the sailors have their dinners and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's not the mess. It's just
their bedrooms.
Quarters.
The quarters, yeah. And the Doctor therefore has a paper, and he's not entirely convinced that this is real. Tegan leaves the TARDIS, starts wandering around herself, and
Mr. Creepy shows up.
What?
Mr. Creepy, consider... what's his name?
Mr. Creepy. We'll stick with Mr. Creepy.
It's Mr. Perv.
Mr. Pervy.
Mariner.
Yeah. He quite likes Tegan for several reasons. The Doctor and Turlough make friends with the sailors, who are looking forward to their session of grog. Tegan is talking, walking around, just moving forward a bit. And then the Doctor bumps into Tegan in in what looks like the captain's cabin. It's a very posh sort of set up for dinner and everything like that, and tells her off for leaving the TARDIS console, Robin, until she says, well, I've got a message from the White Guardian. And but not much of a message, to be fair.
Yeah, the Doctor's very grumpy through this entire story.
No, oh, I didn't read him as grumpy.
Didn't really get him as grumpy, to be fair. Yes. Anyway, so, of course, they're poking around the ship.
I did like Master. This isn't,
you did like
this
Master. He wasn't in this one.
This isn't a an odd bit of... I did like how the captain of the ship comes in. Stryker is his name. Comes in and just kind of stares forward and then turns and looks at the Doctor. It's really effective acting, showing
how...
Oh,
he's a good actor. He's probably directed to do that as well. Ian Kirk says, I normally work 15 hours a week at a distribution depot. This week, I work 65. Blimey neck.
Wow.
I thought I could review the story as well, but I was wrong. That website only has 3 of the 4 episodes. I had a mild version of Corona. I'm glad it's a mild one.
Yeah.
A young man at the depot died of it. And then he said, the distribution depot where I work is a very busy during the current crisis. People sit at home getting bored that the order a parcel from the internet. So basically,
well, we're being encouraged to do so.
Indeed we are. Thank you for that, Ian. So the Doctor, Turlough and Tegan are poking around this ship that looks like an Edwardian ship, and then they find lots of modern pieces of equipment in it. Keypads and then of course the window opens and the Doctor says, this isn't a ship, this is a spaceship. And they look out the window and there's lots of rather exciting for me when I watched it at the time.
Sailing
ships in space. It was quite a amazing sight, really. And something original as well. The ship's, of course, powered by solar rays, I suppose. That's what the sails are for. And we find out through this stuff that these Eternals, which I think are the same race as the Black and White Guardian, am I correct in that?
I don't know.
No. The Eternals actually respect the Guardians.
Okay.
They're different races.
Are the Eternals the same race that is referred to at the end of the Jodie Whittaker era?
I thought that was the case. I think they were connected to these people, were they not? Anyway, they're very bored race, these Eternals. They sort of live outside space and they get bored because they're immortal. So they decided to set up these sort of races just to sort of entertain themselves. I get the impression they stole a few humans or ephemerals, is that what they called them? So as they could have a crew to
ephemerals.
To actually do this. The captain is beautifully played. I can't remember the captain's name. But it's beautifully played, sort of so sinister, but had a sort of air of kindness, but still had a sort of a weirdness to him just by the look in his eyes. Beautifully played, and of course, I'm getting things coming through. Robert sent me a message. Let's see what he says, just in case he can come.
Maybe he can join us.
So I need to get some sleep. He says so. Yeah. He won't be joining us then, okay. Kirby. Lauren said hugs to Ian, so that's nice of Laurie. I can't hug Ian though, Laurie. Social distancing. Right then, where do we get up to? Right then, so they're in a race, and the prize is enlightenment. So basically, when they do this race, at the end of it, they get to watch this story. Fantastic. And of course, we see that this is the last story. We see Turlough in his tap lid, and he keeps getting nagged by the Black Guardian. He doesn't want to kill the Doctor.
And you will die. You have failed me, boy.
Anyway, so the
last time.
Yeah, and of course he knocks.
Absolutely the last time. I mean it this time.
Yeah, does he not throttle him and yeah. They find Turlough unconscious at the bottom of a flight of stairs. And they go out.
Boy, you're moving through this so fast.
Yeah, why shouldn't I
interrupt?
Well, I haven't missed anything, have I?
Probably.
No, I haven't. I'm just moving forward. He's really getting battered over the head, literally, sometimes, Turlough, by the Black Guardian. So, but they have to. They go on the upper deck of the ship, but they have to wear these space suits to go up there.
But they don't really have to, because they can breathe.
Yes, I know. I was just about to say that. But you can take your helmets off there. We've set an atmosphere for you. Turlough has a few little twitches, and then a strange sort of sound in his head, and he gets a bit braver for once, and Dista says, "No, I'm not killing the Doctor. I'd rather kill myself," and launches himself over the side of the ship, and... floats off into space. The lighting and stuff and the actual I was quite impressed with the special effects, the way they did these scenes here, to be fair. I know you lot probably won't, especially Mary won't like the way they did, but anyway, I was quite impressed with it. Yes.
Well, at least we're finally at a point where I can actually say something.
Alright, okay, go on.
Two things. First of all, when he was jumped over the edge there, his wires, which are called Kirby wires,
you have broke. To get that one in, don't you?
Yes, they broke, and he fell about 20 feet.
Ouch.
And thus, in a lot of the scenes where you see him sitting, it's because he can't even walk around. For instance, the console room scene was done at the end of the story, and that's why he's sitting there playing chess instead of walking around or whatever. Of course, he sits to play chess. Secondly, part two ends with Turlough climbing onto the railing and jumping off with the doctor shouting, "No!" But the part three starts with Turlough climbing onto the railing and the doctor shouts, "Don't be an idiot!" instead of "No."
Oh, okay. Never noticed that. And I normally do.
That was very important, yes. Yeah.
Yes, it was. Well, there's also a difference between the next... the end of episode 3 and the beginning of episode 4.
Well, I didn't notice that either, but I suppose you deserve one of those.
Well, I noticed, but I didn't think it was important.
Oh, sorry, Mary. I'll detract the bell.
Well, okay, what was it?
What was
it? What was what?
Wait, what did you notice?
What you just said.
No, I meant for between 3 and 4.
I think she was...
The other ship's captain, she says something different.
Oh, no. She says the same thing. The difference there is that when Rack freezes Tegan, her eyes are wide open. At the beginning of part 4, her eyes are shut.
I bet you didn't notice this without the info text, did you?
That wasn't in the info text.
No, it wasn't in the
info text. She also wobbles around a lot, so, you know,
yes.
That's the only thing that wasn't... about her, yeah.
Paul Clement
says...
None
of those things was in the infotext, and yes, I did watch it with infotext.
Paul Clement says the non-grog-drinking sailor is played by Tony Cornter, who was also Roy Evans in EastEnders. Yeah, was married to Pat Butcher. Or Pat Evans,
yeah.
Even.
Yeah.
Right then, so we do the recap, like I say, and Turlough sort of... Hang on, his DVD jammed. Jumps off the edge, and the man overboard, says the Doctor, as he... very beautifully shot, floats away into space, and of course the Doctor's like, we must get him back, but they think he's going to die, but one of the other ships, I said Captain Rack, stops to rescue him and hoik him over with the net, and Linda Barron, who plays is it Captain Rack?
I want to make sure I get these names right.
Brilliant. And of course what I liked about that is her sort of really sort of overplaying Captain Rack, and then you got to Lee John underplaying his character.
Lee. It's Lee.
I said Lee.
Master?
What?
Master? The scene where they're, the Edwardian ship throws the life ring out is one of the very few places you can see the name of the Edwardian ship It's on the life ring, and it's the shadow.
Right, you can all come back from making your cups of tea.
And remember, the shadow was one of the Black Guardian's minions back during the Key to Time.
Splendid. Right, Laurie Nick says, Kirby, put another quarter in the pendant's jar. Right, anyway, so we get the fact that Rax got a plan. She's trying to win the race by sort of cheating. And
there's a lot of dinging, sorry.
Yes, another is. Tegan's being followed like a little lapdog by, you know, that chap.
Mariner.
Pardon?
Mariner is his
name. I just said that. Meanwhile, Rack strings up Turlo and sort of interrogates him and then offers him a bribe. Tegan is made to dress up rather weirdly and look like Queen Elizabeth I.
It's an Edwardian gown.
She looks like Queen Elizabeth I a little bit.
No, it's an Edwardian gown.
Definitely Edwardian. Victorian would look very different.
So the race gets underway. And
it's actually two pieces that this was infotext. Hmm. It's not a single dress. It's a top and a bottom that were separate that the wardrobe person put together.
Which, while we're interjecting, I'll make the note that I read that Janet said this was her favorite costume in all of her doing Doctor Who.
Did she say if she liked the wig, though?
She didn't mention the wig. And I don't think it's a wig. I think that they just put extra hair on top. I think they teased up the rest of her hair, but then they put an extra piece on top.
It's going to be red.
It doesn't match.
It's going to be red because her hair's brown. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a wig.
No, I'm not. It's not a full head wig.
Oh, I see.
That has a name where you put an extra chunk of hair on.
A weave?
Well, I wouldn't know.
Anyway, right then. So back in the story. So moving forward a little bit. Oh, yeah, there's... I can't remember why Tegan was made to dress up like that. Actually, I know they had a. Oh yeah, because they went over to Captain Rack's ship for a party. Yeah,
Master.
Oh jeez.
I do like the part in the party where the doctor is eyeing the celery and decides to change his celery.
Oh yeah, I didn't see that bit, but I have seen it in previous viewings, and it's just a sticky.
But,
oh god.
Yeah. It's you just think about this.
It's just his as first, sticky as other pieces of celery which aren't sticky. Yes, what?
Well, first of all, the celery that he wears is it's prop celery. He never wears a real piece of celery. But the first stalk of celery that he got was not really real because it came from Castrovalva. And this stalk of celery is also coming from a not quite real ship. So does he ever really have real celery? Think about
Marvelous.
It.
Whoa. God.
Not.
Right. Anyway, Kurt Turlo finds this sort of pokey little weird place within the ship that has a sort of eye on a grate at the bottom of the room where I suppose this is like a big weapon that targets things. I don't know. And then he suddenly gets trapped in the room by the Black Guardian. I wonder if I can get a little sound capture of him doing his laugh. Hang on. Here we go. It's so funny. He's trapped in there and he's going to die. Pardon?
Roberts is setting things up.
Okay.
He might be able to bring him in.
Okay.
Yeah, we know that.
I didn't know that. I was talking to... I had you guys on mute. I was talking to Fred.
Anyway, so yeah, like we said, we did say earlier on that Tegan is made to... Basically, she clicks her fingers and she suddenly sort of... What would you call it? Hypnotized, isn't it? She just sort of goes... Shuts off for a little bit. Strange power.
The thing about the grid room, which is so strange, is that... They have to have this giant sign saying, vacuum shield off.
And also, they also have a twitching, nervous, ginger-haired man dressed in a schoolboy outfit, which is also quite amusing itself, holding a tap handle. Anyway, the Doctor comes in and saves Turlough, but does look a little bit suspicious as to why Turlough's in there anyway. And then Rat comes in and, hang on, no, he does not yet, sorry. Oh, yes, no. they was talking about a stone, weren't they? It was a stone that was in Tegan's tiara, which is a focal point for this thing, what they are standing in. Yeah, just moving forward a bit. Oh, yeah, and then, yeah. What is that? What was the point of the stone again? I think it was the focal point.
Yes, it's a focal point. The Captain Rack has sent a stone over to the other two ships that we already saw blown up. We saw the one in the Greek ship when we saw the Greek captain, and the Doctor had his suspicions because it seemed out of place. And then the other stone was sent over to the other ship that blew up on the Sword.
Have you ever had that situation where you wished you hadn't asked the question? That just happened to me then. Anyway, the Doctor and Turlough discovered by...
Next week, I'm not as familiar with the story, so you're not going to get a lot of this from me.
Hey.
Oh, I think we will anyway.
Yeah, probably.
That never held you back before, Kirby.
Rack discovers the Doctor and Turlough, and then Turlough betrays the Doctor, or at least pretends to. I don't know what his plans are at this point. If he's actually trying to get the Doctor killed to try and finally get the Black Guardian off his back. Just moving forward a bit. Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a point in the race, isn't there, a little bit later on, where one of the ships gets destroyed and they sort of don't... They sort of pass it off quite lightly, but Tegan finds it quite upsetting.
There's two ships that get destroyed.
Well, you know what I mean, but Tegan finds it quite upsetting, which is quite nice. I've got to mention about Lee John. I met Lee John up at Newcastle in 2016. Very nice chap, and had a really, really good interview with him, which is on the corresponding somewhere. The corresponding episode of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, Four Dimensions Newcastle, the number of which escapes me, but I think it's somewhere around 300 odd.
I can look it up.
No. Anyway, so Lee John is a friend of the show. Anyway, apparently Robert's ready. So we'll get Robert on this if it works. Skype hasn't been, and of course we always have these comedy moments with Robert when he either his microphone's not switched on or Robert Haynes. Oh, 3 months ago apparently. I don't know which one's him now. Let's try that one. Trouble when people have two Skype thingies. This is very thrilling for the viewers and listeners that I'm trying to call Robert. Oh, I'll have to message him. Oh, he's on. Hey, Robert.
Now, when
Hello.
Did you...
Hello.
When
did you...
Hello.
Hello.
Finally here.
Do you have a quote?
It's enlightenment.
Yeah, that'll do. Thank you, Robert. Yes, Robert Haynes is here with us. Thank you, Robert, for taking the time to show up,
more than some of the other
co-presenters haven't.
Robert?
It's 2:40 a.m.
Oh, well, we haven't got... I've got stuff to do anyway, Robert. We won't be here for much longer. We're right halfway through...
When episode you said Dimensions 2016?
Oh, sorry, I thought we were talking to Robert. Yes, Dimensions 2016, October 2016.
That was episode 321.
Thank you. That's where you'll hear the Lee John interview. Very nice chap. I've got my picture taken with him as well, and it's up on my wall, and it's signed by Lee John to me. That's quite nice. Anyway, so Captain Rack takes her place in the...
If he put your last name on it, did he add an extra E?
Well, he signed it, and it says Lee... John.
Is that how he pronounces it too? Is the Lee, or does he just say Lee?
Lee.
Okay. I don't know. I never heard of him.
He was in a band called Imagination. Mm-hmm. And if I got my
Nation.
If I got my Spotify account up, I could actually play the offending song.
Offending?
Well, it's not offending. Defend me. But it's a iconic,
were very popular.
The song that that they're most known by is I wonder if I need, no, then it comes up with Imagine Dragons. Imagine a shun. Right, he's with one hand typing, is he? Please don't come up with nothing. I must have spelled imagination wrong.
It's I-M-A-G-I-N-A-T-I-O-N.
The biggest hit was Just an Illusion.
I know, you blooming spoiler.
That's my job.
No, it isn't. Right, this is it. Oh, it's not playing. Oh, I better skip it forward a bit. There you go. That's Lee John singing.
I love the.
What's it called?
It's Just an Illusion.
The name of the song?
Just an Illusion.
Oh, yeah, 1982.
The end of the song, Body Talk, Body Talk.
Master.
Oh, God, yes!
Yeah, his character's name is Mansell.
Yes,
I like how they've got all the names of the characters are nautical-related, and
yes.
one of the characters over on the Edwardian ship is named Maldemar, or Seasick.
God. Right, so Rack, she does a bit of, you know, when the Doctor was in, what was that one? He's in that machine and entropy made him split into several pieces. We see lots and lots of...
The
Leisure Hive.
Leisure Hive, yeah. It's almost a bit like the Queen Bohemian Rhapsody video as well. But we see a lot more Racks floating around. The tiara gets ruined and... What?!
That's very similar to what they did in Curse of the Bad Plot as well.
It was?
When the mirror got broken.
Okay, anyway, so the tiara gets smashed, and instead of bits of, what would you call it, jewel, there's little bits of confetti on the floor, which they'll shine a little light on to make it glow. The Doctor scrambles onto the deck and throws this thing that's going to explode out into space. It therefore explodes, and just moving forward a bit, I lost sort of the will to live there. And of course, what I forgot to mention during this whole thing that when they're trying to read everybody's minds, and they do, the Doctor tries to hide the existence of the TARDIS, and as soon as he mentions the TARDIS, they sort of listen in and sort of then become very fascinated by it.
As you would.
The TARDIS, the what are they called again? Eternals.
Eternals.
Yeah. They go. Anyway, so that when I say we said about Tegan getting upset about the desk, we see some ready brick dead people floating past the screen, just glowing away. That upsets. Were they supposed to be eternal deads or
they were,
Eternals?
Yes, they're supposed to be Eternals. That's Rack and Mansell.
But they're not really dead then if they're eternal because they're
Right, but they kind of fade away.
But not. I thought they couldn't die.
They're going to a different place.
Yeah, so they're not dead then, are they?
No.
So why are you getting upset
for? But they're going. They did. They were ejected from the ship.
But who won the race? Because at the end of the episode, because they reached the thing, and there's a big meeting between the White and Black Guard and a rather rubbish looking crystal ball that glows away.
And the Doctor won the race.
Oh, the Doctor won the race. And surprise, surprise. So the Doctor and Turlo walk into the room, and the Turlo is offered the prize.
Because the Doctor refused it.
Doctor refused it. So
Turlo's offered part of the prize.
All right. God's sake.
pedantic.
But the crux of the story is he surprisingly, when
he tries
having
to be tempted by the
yeah, yeah. But the surprising thing, obviously, having watched Turlough over these last two stories, and what he's had to go through was a bit of turmoil, to be certain, because he clearly didn't want to kill the Doctor, but he is a bit of a scamp. He's not a goody-goody, is he? Anyway, surprisingly, he just throws it at the Black Guardian. He goes, yeah, yeah, and, yeah.
I'm melting.
But the funny thing is, at the end of the story, they say, where should we go? And Turlough says, my home planet. Not sure they did actually go to his home planet.
Yes, eventually they end up
They
at
do
Triad.
Eventually, yes.
But not immediately.
Well, that's right.
Yes, they went the very, very long way around. There you go. That's Enlightenment, which I think for Fifth Doctor times is a bit of a classic for the Fifth Doctor era.
Did anybody watch the special edition of that?
Yeah, I watched. No. Well, I know I watched the special edition up to a point in which I got bored of it. I find this yeah. easier to watch this original version. I like what they attempted to do with it, but I prefer.
It's pretty wasted, I reckon.
A bit what?
Yeah, I've watched the extras on that disc, but I've never really been interested in watching the new version, because I prefer, even when we have got one where they've added CGI, I prefer watching the originals.
Yes, yeah, sometimes that's the case. But with this one, so I'm just going to say, it'll sum up what I think of the story. It's a pretty good story. I mean, obviously, I've watched it over and over again, and because I think it was one of the ones that was out when I didn't have a lot of Doctor Who stories to watch, so I've watched it quite a few times. I think it's actually a really, really good story. I didn't like Lee John in it when it first came out. I thought his acting wasn't particularly good. But like I said, it balances things. You've got Linda Barron overplaying, which is very important for her character. And she's very good.
And at least she didn't sing.
Yeah. And then you've got him underplaying his. And I think that worked really, really well. And it's a really good story. It's a great cast. And bear in mind, it's all studio-bound. Apart from the filmed scenes on the decks of the ship, which
those were also a studio.
I know, but then they're a different studio. They're not a BBC studio. And all in all, I think
it's a BBC studio. It's just a different studio. Yeah, it's not.
Right, thank you for being pedantic. Yes. Anyway, it's actually a pretty good story. It's not one of my favourites, but I know I can see why people find this to be particularly good. It's well written. It's well acted. Well directed. It's paced quite well as well. Well as well. How can you get well twice in the sentence? So, yeah, it's
well
pretty
as well.
Good, really. What did you think of it then, Robert?
I haven't rewatched it, to tell you the truth.
Well, you've seen it before.
I have it clear in my head.
You do?
And I really enjoyed it. I think not so much when I first watched it, because I was thinking, what the hell is space? What the hell are ships doing in space? And how do they move? And that sort of got me not enjoying it. But when I watched it when the DVD came out, I really enjoyed it, and I think the model shots look really great. Don't need to be added to with anything. So, yeah, very enjoyable. And I like the puzzlement at first about what's going on.
The puzzlement or the enlightenment?
Oh, we're out in space.
So well done. Excellent. Right then. Who should we go? Oh, Kirby, what did you think of it?
I really like this story. Yes. Every time I see it, I like it better and better every time.
Yes.
It's imaginative. It's the sets are great. The costumes are great. I don't think that anyone's really overacting. I mean, Rack is supposed to be that way. That's just the way her character is.
Yes, I said that.
I mean, some people complain that she's doing pantomime.
No.
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 I think she's on the side of I'll give you an example. Paradise Towers and Richard Briers, that was overacting.
Yeah.
Have no idea.
This,
I've seen it.
You should see it.
Well, we'll be seeing it.
You will see it.
Within the next 12 months.
But, yeah, this is an example of she's got the right side. It's like what's that guy? I can't remember. Cummings, what's his name? In Plague King John, was it?
Yeah.
No, he got it right. He was overacting, but he got it right on the right side. that's what I reckon Linda Barron did.
I think what she's basically an Eternal, isn't she? Modeling her character. She's playing a character herself. The Eternal being Captain Rack was actually pretending to be the captain of a ship. So she was just playing it up a little bit. Cosplaying, exactly. If you like.
Exactly. And this is one of those stories, even though I never saw this until around the time that we reviewed it the first time, which was, 5 years ago? So I came into it not knowing much about it, and this is one that I will go back and watch over and over again.
Yeah, so have you watched the extended the movie length version? You haven't? No. Okay. It is difficult to watch.
No, I said that.
Okay. Oh, you should watch it for completeness.
Yeah, I'll try and watch it one day.
Yeah.
Laurie Nix says
put it in there because next week is only two episodes.
Laurie Nix says, okay, I'm coming clean. My hair currently resembles Captain Rax. She's wearing a hairpiece attachment we used to call a fall.
That's the word I was searching for, yeah.
Neil James says, I'm glad the Black Guardian trilogy ended on a high point. Sorry, are you done, Kirby?
Yeah.
Well, if you're done and Robert's done, you know what that means. Mary, what did you think of it?
Well, when I first watched this story, of course, it was completely out of context. So I was mostly confused by it. I didn't know, why Turlough was behaving the way he was towards the Doctor. I didn't know anything about the Black or White Guardian. The story from top to bottom just didn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think I probably didn't think very highly of it then. But now watching it this time, slotted into this progressive story watching that we're doing, it made so much more sense. So I think I enjoyed it a whole lot more than some things that I really enjoyed, the effect of the sailing ships in space. That was like just magical for Doctor Who.
Yeah.
What I read is by the way, this is the first story written by a woman for Doctor Who.
How was it?
Barbara Clegg.
And what problem that they were having, though, is that when they were going to put this out, they noticed that the episodes were really too short. But she was off on another project, so they couldn't get her in to do more writing. So that's why we see such long previews at the start of each episode. They're replaying several minutes of the episode before, is to extend them. And that's also why we get this super long and, in my opinion, unnecessary scene with the two guardians at the end. I mean, that was all after the fact written stuff to stretch that scene out. And in my opinion, it looks like it.
Mm-hmm. You've done your research, Mary.
And I also read that this whole thing was delayed a lot because there was an electrician strike. And for some reason, and I don't know why, I didn't make the connection, there was no videotaping allowed. So the whole thing is on film, which I think is what helps to give it, that richer texture. It's just a prettier picture because it's all on film. And in many ways, I did enjoy it a lot. I liked the acting. I loved the sets. I liked the pseudo-historical different ships and all that. But the one thing that I absolutely hated is that the ending makes no sense. Neither the Doctor or Turlough are in any way, like physical fight kind of people. And yet somehow they're not the ones thrown off the ship, but the captain and her first mate. And it's like, how did that even happen? And there's absolutely no explanation. Nobody says anything. They just accept the fact that, there's the captain and there's her first mate. And it's like, wow, they were definitely in the stronger position when we last see them. So I don't. And so that kind of a quick kind of hurry up, makes no sense ending spoils it for me some. I liked it up to that point, and then it just kind of went sour for me, plus that really long scene with the guardians, because that just went on and on. So I think the whole thing is good until we get to episode 4. And then that's when things kind of fall apart, but I'd still give it like a 7 out of 10.
Well, that's not bad, is it?
That, and Adam,
that almost warrants a... but not quite.
Can I ask you something, Adam?
Depends if it involves money.
No. Okay. I'm just going to ask, when you first watched this, way back when, did you know who the Guardians were? Because they hadn't really been mentioned since the Key to Time.
I remembered parts of the stories from the Key to Time, but I didn't watch the whole thing as far as I can remember when it was on. I couldn't watch every Saturday for reasons. Maybe I was at rugby games with my mum. I can't remember. So I couldn't see every single story. But
because I'm just wondering how people would have come to the
Me personally, Black no, Guardian. But I didn't really have a problem. I mean, even if you think that White Guardian's a new character, I don't think it's an issue. It's better if you're more familiar with Doctor Who to know, like we're watching it as we are, you know, in order. It's not that long since we've seen the Black and White Guardian in that series. Obviously, when this was out, it was like 3-4 years, wasn't it, in between.
Providing context for Mary as well.
So
yeah, that's good.
That way it works quite well. Yeah. But yeah, not at the time, but it didn't make a difference to me because I loved Peter Davis and I loved Doctor Who so much. It was just Doctor Who to watch. And
because I know there are a lot of people, like I meet on forums, that say, I became interested when Peter Davison was the Doctor. And I'm a bit like yourself, really. But, you know, I'm just wondering how, if those sort of people came along for the ride and how they would have reacted to the Black and White Guardians.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, Terry Miles says Venusian Aikido. I think he was referring to the fighting the Doctor and Turlo did.
How they overcame.
Cora Dickerson says, is it the only Doctor Who written and directed by a woman? That's a good question.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Rona Munro did.
Yeah, didn't she do...
Survival.
Yes, Fiona.
That's it, yeah. I think she's talking about classic.
Yeah, she was the director.
There was the next time one was both written and directed by women was the one last season series with Alan Cumming.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we look forward to that one. So that's it then. Now we can move.
What? No, we saw that one.
No, I'm just saying that's it. Now we can move on to feedback. Trying to compact things a bit better. God. Right then, so I've got Terry Miles says, hi 20 megabytes, I have watched this story a few times now, twice today. God, wow. He's got a lot of time on his hands. I really enjoyed the guest stars. Nurse Gladys was so over the top, she made me laugh.
Emmanuel.
Yeah, maybe that's over your Americans' heads, isn't it? It's from a TV series called Open All Hours. Anyway, back to this. She was so... over the top, she made me laugh every time she spoke. Keith Barron was seemed to be playing it as a zombie, but as he said in the extras, he was playing it as an aloof Eternal, which came across well. Bloody good actor. Lee John was so wooden, I laughed every time he was in shot. Thank God he stuck to singing. Turlo tripping over the doorstep was funny, as was the celery change in the party, and best not to mention to Mary about running through the corridors, which seemed never ending, although if you look at the walls, they were the same corridor.
Yeah, they were. They were, of course. I noticed that.
The space helmets were much better this time, as everybody had short hair, not the 80s hair of last week. As always, the BBC costumes department did an excellent job with the dresses and clothing. I watched the re-enlightened version afterwards, and some of the effects looked much better, and the discarded and extra shots made for a better story. The extras on the disc were very informative. All in all, I really enjoyed this story. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, Kirby, you posted a request for feedback in the usual place.
Yes, and I posted it in an unusual way.
You did?
Is that an extra E or something?
Yes,
you're so clever. Oh, my goodness.
I said feedback time for enlightenment.
There you go. Absolutely.
And I also said, so fill up your glasses and join in the song.
Yeah, that's
all right. Stop Black going on about your own poor attempts at humor and get on with the feedback.
Black Guardian's behind you and you won't last long. It's your last chance all right. of learning. Enlightenment's free fling. Captain Rex got a nice line, but at least she won't sing.
Alexa,
everyone will join in.
Front room light on. Get on with it, Kirby.
Are you wishing me to read these?
Yes, get on with it.
No, sing them. Sing them.
Jeff Waddle posts a picture of what I believe is Lee John's singing group.
Imagination.
Ian Bissett says, nice rack. Jeff Waddle says the story where Nurse Gladys Emmanuel, to avoid Arkwright's advances, has to reveal that she is in fact an immortal captain of a space frigate and kidnaps both Lee John from imagination and Keith Barron from duty free for an off-screen unspecified reason or plot hole, if you like, and ventures off happily on her way. It all seems a bit far-fetched to me.
Yes.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, yeah, Captain Rack. I posted a screenshot from one of the extras of Fiona Cummings saying offline sequences are done with Kirby's. And I comment, and boy, do my arms get tired. Ba-doom-ching.
No.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, what was the line where Captain... Oh, thank you. thank you. I'm here every week.
Jack, get on with it.
Until he fires me. Are you going to fire me?
Get on with it.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, what was the line the captain tells Tegan while hypnotizing her? It's, have you heard of time standing still? I provide him with that. He also says, kind of missed Sarah Jane when it happened to her. I pointed people out to where the transcripts of all episodes are.
That doesn't count as feedback.
And Alan T. Butcher posted a picture. I don't know who that is. It says, Rack, the image of him in your mind is quite intriguing. Tegan's secret doctor fantasy. Can someone tell me what's that picture?
Don't know. Move on.
Picture.
It's a picture, and I just knocked my microphone. Sorry about that, listeners.
Can't see that. Which picture is that?
It's a picture of some... Butcher's response to down there about halfway through.
I don't recognise the people in it. It looks like Peter Davison.
Oh, no, that's Peter Davison in, what's the name? What was that Tomorrow People episode that he did?
There we go.
That's Peter Davison?
Yes, really? It's obviously Peter Davison. Stop diverting from the feedback, you naughty man.
Okay. Lillian Robbins says, oh, I get it. Extra ease because of Lee John and the point because of Linda Barron's internal song in The Gunfighters. Hun, that's getting way too esoteric for the average fan. Have Adam take a point away.
True, already done it.
And I said, well, at least someone noticed because no one seemed to notice. Robert Wentz Jr. said, LOL, was sung better than the story at the Last Chance Saloon. And then Robert Wentz Jr. says, my review, remind me of the War Games, people being used for other alien plans. Instead of people fighting wars, we have spaceships running a race for enlightenment, people under control drinking fake rum and wearing space suits, and the screen just shifted because someone added a comment.
That was me.
I'm kind of glad the Guardian storyline is ending here. The doctor enjoyed the food they were serving, and Tegan got over her seasickness after a drink. This should have been a three-parter instead of four to tighten the story up. Best part was the intro of Captain Rack. At the end, we find out she was working for the Black Guardian and gets kicked overboard without knowing why. Tegan gets hypnotized by Rack, and the doctor saves the ship, and it just shifted again because someone is... I believe it's Robert is doing that. Tegan gets hypnotized by Rack, and the doctor saves the ship by throwing the bomb, the red stone, after the doctor does a dumb thing and breaking the stone in a lot of pieces, amping the power before tossing it. Above average story, 3.5 out of 5. Lori Nix says, can't stop talking about Tegan's rack in this one, boys. Sheesh.
You said that.
Seriously, this one elevated the silly Black Guardian arc into something worthwhile indeed. Dragged a little, but was interesting enough to keep me watching. Edwardian costumes and setting helped a lot. I always appreciate the Eternal Beings playing with Earthlings for sport trope in sci-fi. Now, where's my tiara and glass of rum? She also says the Black Guardian used to moonlight as Motley?
Yeah.
Okay.
From my Mikey Rises.
Neil James says, Enlightenment. Wow, what a gem of a story. The opening TARDIS scenes are very moody with the orange light lighting. Turlo getting to know the ship's crew is great fun. Fantastic sets and music add to the palpable odd atmosphere on the ship. And I just shifted again because someone's typing comments.
That.
The first two episodes are perfect with stunning cliffhangers. Although, as I pointed out, the cliffhangers don't resolve the same way. There's such a wonderful feeling of strangeness. Why are the wetsuits on an Edwardian sailing ship? We get a beautiful scene between Tegan and Turlo as they realize the cabin is full of Tegan's possessions. It's one of my favorite scenes in all of Doctor Who. This is easily one of my favorite Janet Fielding performances. The Eternals are such a great idea. Spooky, unfeeling mind readers. The way the actors underplay them just adds to a terrific script. There's something heartbreaking about Mariner's crush on Tegan.
Yeah.
Parts 3 and 4 aren't quite as strong as the first two. Linda Barron and Lee John seem to be in a different show altogether, but it's also weird and fun that I'll just go with it. Peter Davison's Doctor is superb. There are a couple of dodgy effects, but they pale in comparison to the gorgeous model work of the ships and the impressive scenes on Stryker's deck. Let's just not mention the Black Guardian's pantomime laugh. As you can probably tell, I adore Enlightenment 5 out of 5.
Me.
Oh, and since you skipped over that scene entirely, Master,
what?
They brought in the actress who played Aunt Vanessa specifically to take
for the
that
photo.
Picture.
Yeah.
Ah.
Cute.
She's dead
and,
now.
Yeah, and Robert has added several comments.
Yes, he
here.
Has, but never mind. He's just doing it to wind you up. That's the end of that part of the feedback. But we do have another bit of feedback, don't we, Mary?
Yes, we do. From Mr. Let Me Write for the Next 3 Days and Read It All. Oh, okay, Ellen, here we go. Perpetual wacky races in space with sailing ships or the Black and White Guardians show. Dear 20 Megabiters, Enlightenment is, of course, a closely studied portrayal of the relationship between the creative arts and their audiences. In particular, Stryker and his Eternals are particularly passive viewers, simply viewing the experiences of human ephemerals in pursuit of their goal single-mindedly, but accepting their role, being careful to appreciate what is happening. However, Mariner exhibits the creepy obsessiveness this may appear to be. The Greek and the Buccaneer captains and crew seem to be more active viewers, trying to riff off the humans they have acquired, wanting to take more control of the outcome, but their own designs. One meets their undoing at the hands of the other, and then the Doctor intervenes to usurp the other. This being a Doctor Who story, the Doctor rightly wins the race with the assistance of a companion, and all is as it should be with real enlightenment residing within the created world engendered by the creators, not the viewers, but meaningful to the viewer in their own interpretation nonetheless. This scenario provides a great context in which Turlough's dilemma may be resolved. Having been properly involved in a victory assisting the Doctor, the eponymous Time Lord seems confident that Turlough will follow his better instincts. The Doctor knows he has no use for this construct of enlightenment available to him and rightly understands his enlightened example will be enough enlightenment to inspire Turlough and that in itself will be enough to smite the Black Guardian's hold over him. It should be noted that whilst some thought it was a really good idea to cut some stuff out, mess it about a bit, and add a few extra effects, in fact, this was only a moderately good idea, as the original version is easily as good, if not better.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I don't know what he means about cutting stuff out and messing it about, because what I read was that because the episodes were so short that we're virtually seeing everything that they filmed. We also learned that the incidents shown in the gunfighters were being eternally monitored by Captain Rack, no doubt, so she could experience both the hilarity and grim death of the OK Corral. Clearly, this inspired a song cycle, which, whilst actually finite, does seem to be eternal whilst you listen. Oh, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
All in all, Enlightenment is richly portrayed, well-constructed, and satisfyingly concluded tale. The Eternals provide a thoroughly alien set of protagonists. Their indolent natural state and pursuit of vicarious satiation to mitigate this condition is enough to overlay on a simple race scenario to generate a compelling story. Turlo is made to confront his dilemma, born of a Faustian pact. And whilst it doesn't make him seem likable, it does mean he is shown conclude a more enlightened moral position, or was preferable to a flashy notional enlightenment at the cost of moral turpitude. I have real reservations about the place of the black and white guardians in the Doctor Who universe, since personifications of abstractions are further down the road of mythic delineations that I think suits the show. However, I can't help enjoying the portrayals of both by two very grand elderly actors. This story is perhaps four episodes too short because we wasted all that time on Terminus sorting out the doggy daycare, thereby missing the early stages of this race. Next up, Doctor Who and the Time Meddler 2, or in praise of Total War, the musical. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Well, thank you very much, Alan.
Master,
I've got some things, some family emergency stuff here, so I'm going to have to get off.
Okay.
So, sorry, mustache.
Okay. Oh, well, we need you there anyway. Bye. Well, I'd rather rescues everybody from having the quiz, doesn't it? I've got the cards in my hand and all. Look, they're already up and put them back in the box now.
Kevin would have won anyway. Oh, mind you, Mary's been studying up, so we don't know.
I'll stay connected in case that things allow me to come back down.
Okay. Right then, Alan, what else did we get on here? It's Alan C. Butcher says the pick is Peter Davis, and well, we established that, didn't we? So,
no, I wrote
And then Bill McCann says, hi, 20 megabyters, must dash, can't stick around, but as always, I look forward to hearing the podcast once it hits my feed. Thank you very much, Bill. Right then, so what does rather move us on, because obviously the quiz is now fallen by the wayside too.
Oh gosh, my heart is broken.
Don't be sarcastic. Nothing on the news, because it says it just says about the farewell Sarah Jane mini episode, which I still haven't blimmin' well watched.
It's lovely.
And what was not on the news, but there was a thing on BBC One, was it last night or the night before, in which all apart from all the Doctor actors apart from Christopher Eccleston got together to do a message for the NHS.
Eccles cake.
Yes. So that's worth looking out for. They haven't published it on DoctorWhoNews.net, but it is out there. So I'm pretty sure I shared a link that Ian Drury had filmed off the television. I don't know if usually these things get taken off by the BBC, but it might be on there somewhere. But yeah, keep an eye out for that one. That's quite charming. Right, the other thing I wanted to talk about is a rather touchy subject, Robert, isn't it? Before we go, I've always been trying to champion people getting prostate cancer tests, I am guilty myself of not getting around to it, even though I've been saying you must have. In my defense, I have had an examination in that area a few years ago, but it's always advisable to have a test. Now, I even went to the doctor.
Want to hear about your sex life.
Yeah, shut up, you. but I know I got the little form you get to go to the hospital to get the blood test done for it, stuff like that. So I did get part of the way through it. It's just with this current climate and everything like that, I haven't actually been able to push it through to actually getting the test done. Although I did have a blood test a few weeks ago, and hope it'd be nice if they could have picked that up on that, perhaps. I don't know. But Robert, you have some rather worrying news in that area.
Yeah, because I've been on testosterone replacement for a while, every now and again they check my PSA levels, which are like prostate-specific antigen. It's like a protein that they can find. Mine had been like 0.1 over the upper limits of what my PSA was supposed to be. So my doctor said, I'll give you a digital rectal examination just to check your prostate, which is not uncomfortable at all. But he said he couldn't feel anything abnormal. But he said, you know, in 3 months' time, go and have your PSA checked again. And it was still just 0.1 over. So it wasn't really that much over. And it's not really that an indicative of there being any cancer anyway. You can have high levels for other reasons as well. But anyway, I just thought, well, you know, it's twice I'll refer you to a urologist. So when I went away on my holiday, I came back and found, oh, I've got an MRI due on my prostate. I was thinking, oh, they're getting quite serious about this now. So I had the MRI and said they found something on the left side of my prostate. And I said, oh, we're going to have to do a biopsy. Now, biopsy is probably one of the, well, beyond an MRI, which can help to see if there's any cancer there in the first place, which is like a very non-invasive kind of thing. So, you know, if you have to go for an MRI, it's no big deal. But I will say that the biopsy quite hurt because you're quite vulnerable sitting with your legs spread wide open and having someone stick needles that look the length of knitting needles. Wow. Right under your scrotum.
Yeah.
And having seven of those put in. And what they do is they also stick an ultrasound wand up your backside just so they can see the placement of – but that's not the thing to worry about. It's those bloody needles. But I had a nurse next to me while that was going on. And, you know, she was providing some kind of distraction, you know, talking away. But I took one look at these needles when I first saw it. And she must sort of seen the color drain from my face. And she said, don't look at them, don't look at them. But I did want to know what was going on. But I asked them to turn the screen around so I could watch, you know, the ultrasound as it's going on. And they just guide the needle in and then sort of fire at the last bit to go into the prostate. And they just took about seven samples, tissue samples. And they said four out of the seven samples came back as cancerous cells.
Yep.
So I will say one thing about prostate cancer, it is a slow-growing cancer in most cases.
Yeah.
One thing to look out for, I know you can put it away, put it down to, you know, I'm getting older, that kind of thing, because that's what I did, was the fact that I was having to get up and pee more often. And, you know, that's one of the signs. Plus, it's hard for me because I suffer with fibromyalgia, which is pain all throughout my body. So I was, you know, you also can get pain in your hips, pain in your lower back, things like that. And I just put that down to fibromyalgia and my spinal problems. I've got ankylosing spondylitis. But, you know, if you are, I'd say, a normal sort of person, if you get things like, you know, you're noticing you have to pee more, even some people are apparently having trouble to start going for a pee, but those sort of things. But, you know, what does it hurt to have a blood test, a simple blood test to just check for something in your blood?
Exactly.
Does it hurt to have your doctor stick his fingers up your butt? That doesn't hurt. There's nothing to worry about whatsoever, and it can save your life.
Exactly.
You know, because, as I say, it's a slow-growing cancer.
Just have it done anyway.
You won't
just
know about it until the last, you know.
It will save lives. If you'll be surprised, your life may be saved just by a trip to the doctors to get a blood test to find out if you're clear or not. You know, yes, some people might get some bad news, but it could be bad news that will result long term in good news, because if it's caught early enough, you'll be fine. But you need to get it done.
It is a very treatable cancer, you know. So.
Absolutely, if you catch it early enough. And because it's so slow burning, like you say, Robert, you may have it and be completely oblivious to the fact you've got it. So therefore, if you catch it early enough, it won't change your life to that degree. But we're all thinking of you, Robert, and hopefully, you know, they've given you the care to push it through. You know, that's probably the bad phrase to push it through. But can get some treatment.
A friend did say, "You'll lick this," and I said, "I don't want to lick my prostate. Thank you very much."
Well, what I wonder is, with all of this coronavirus, people staying home, nothing but emergency procedures.
Exactly.
I wonder how many people are out there sitting on this kind of an issue.
Literally and it's sitting not on it.
Well, funny you should say that, Mary, because somebody who I know in the UK, he was saying his brother-in-law, you know, his wife's brother, has a rare blood cancer. He was going through a trial of a treatment that's been suspended while coronavirus is going on. You know, how can you suspend something with something that's so serious? And that's in the UK. Yeah. I mean, we're lucky here in Australia, things seem to be managed a lot better. Mm-hmm. And they, from Tuesday, they're restarting elective surgeries, elective surgeries.
And in the States, you know, all physician things are being shut down except for emergencies. Mm-hmm. And I worry about people who are sitting and waiting for procedures or for surgeries that maybe, you know, are not going to be life-saving, but are going to get them out of pain or discover something that needs to be treated early. I worry about that.
Because all the health dollars, all the health concerns are focused on this, which is taking up a lot of hospital beds.
And that's the problem. A lot of people who would normally be out to the doctors, you know, for the most minor of things are staying home because quite rightly so, in this country, we've been told to protect the NHS. But if you are ill, they are there for you. They have the capacity to deal with these things as well. Not every single bed in every hospital is going to be coronavirus because they will be contaminating everything. So they have a special way of containing the coronavirus patients within a intensive care unit. So, you know, what people are thinking, they're going to go into hospital, there's going to be these germs everywhere and they're going to catch it. Well, they won't because they know what they're doing. They will not have.
Otherwise, everybody in the hospital will be sick.
Yes, of course. Exactly.
But imagine, I mean, if you're Robert and, you know, you're attributing what is going on with you to, you know, like your fibromyalgia, you're not going to the doctor because they're not letting you.
No, that's right.
Imagine. And then this thing is advancing all the time.
So get yourselves checked out. And obviously that's very male-based in regards to prostate cancer, but the same goes with women and cervical smears and things like that.
And you should say that, Adam, because in Australia, prostate cancer kills more men than it does women from breast cancer.
Yeah. Also that's because breast cancer does get more airtime, and quite rightly so. But there's also testicular cancer as well, which is another cancer, which is sort of men don't
and also,
want to check themselves out,
also,
do they? Basically,
don't be ashamed at disrobing for your doctor or whatever. Mm. I mean, they've seen it all and they've done it all. So,
and it will save your life, and that's more important than a little bit of embarrassment.
My point isn't that people aren't going because they don't want to. My point is they're not allowed to because the doctor's offices are not even offering these simple tests.
There is a reduction in services. As my father-in-law's found some things on his leg, these sort of like ulcers are starting to appear on his leg, and he's phoned them up and they've sort of more or less deflected him, say, well, you'll just have to stay at home and put this cream on it and what have you, where he really should be at least at the doctors having it examined and treated and dressed, but they're not doing that.
I totally agree. Yeah. I don't think doctors' offices should be shut down.
Yeah. As you can see here, though, in Australia, it's a bit of a different situation.
Yeah, so it is.
Not everything has shut down, but they've reduced things like they'll still accept Category 1 patients for things. But as I say, from Tuesday, they're starting to do the elective surgeries.
Yeah, again. Which is good. It's very good. Mm-hmm. And I hope that the U.S. starts up again, too, that way, at least in the healthcare. Yep.
But as we wind up the show, and people might be wondering how this has got any connection with Doctor Who, well, WHO, the World Health Organization, is the Who part of it, and doctors are treating people. Doctor Who.
And Patrick Morty was a Who doctor before he was Doctor Who.
Absolutely. So next week we'll be talking about, not to say Robert, but hopefully, we never know, we'll be talking about The King's Demon. There's only a little one, two-part story. Yes. So it should be easy to digest in this time trying to stay in and stay at home and stuff.
It's a fun little romp, though, isn't it?
It is a fun little romp. And we meet a new companion as well in that story. No spoilers. But until then, I just have to say thank you all for coming, especially you, Robert, under the circumstances. It's been great. You know, I should really get some sleep. It should be great hearing you, and hopefully you'll be back on again at some point soon. But until then, thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Go and get your prostate cancer test done. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation, no copyright infringement intended.